Excuse me, the recording has started.
Great, thanks so much. Well, good morning, afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the new GTLD Subsequent Procedures Working Group call on the 11th of September, 2017. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. We have quite a few participants online. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you are only on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself be known now? All right, thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will hand the meeting back over to Jeff Newman.
Thanks, Michelle. Welcome, everyone. It's September 11, 2017, as was said, and the agenda is on the right-hand side of the Adobe Connect. Start with our normal welcome, then do some work trackets. We'll do a quick update from the chairs on some recent developments, then talk about the next steps for the working group, and then we'll spend hopefully the bulk of time talking about the next of our full group discussions, which is going back to the categories or different TLD types, and you'll see a link to the document. Is there any other business that anyone can think of right now? And I'll ask again, of course, after, towards the end of the meeting. Okay, not seeing any, which is fine. Again, we can, I'll come back to that later on during the meeting. And now I'll do a call for any updates to statements of interest. Is there anyone that would like to update their statement of interest on the phone? Okay, I'm not seeing any, which is good. I will now do a work track update. And with that, I will look to see who is from work track one that is on the call. And I'm seeing Krista and, let's see, Sarah on as well. And Sarah, so who would like to give the update? Thank you, Sarah.
Thanks, Jeff. This is Sarah Bakke for the record. We are, for work track one, we're going to be finishing up our review of the community responses that we received. Our next meeting will be covering the RSP, register provider accreditation program or potential accreditation program and the feedback that we received from the community on that. And then, in general, we're sort of going through and reviewing all the recommendations and feedback that we've received on all the topics and starting to compile that into something that we can bring to the work group to review and try to finally or start to finalize and get some solid recommendations that we can take back for the full working group. So that is where we are. Some of them are going to be more implementation. Some of them are going to be more like a decision tree where we need to get a little bit more information or just make some decisions. But that is where we are and what you can look forward to. So if you can join us on our call next week on the RST program, that'd be great.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Sarah. Going into work track two, we have both Mike and Phil on the phone. And tell us about your now weekly calls. Thanks, Michael.
Thanks, Jeff. Can you hear me well? All right,
yep,
I'm just gonna
we can hear.
Okay, good. All right, thank you very much. So, yeah, Work Track 2 is now on a weekly schedule. Yay! Sorry. But this week we'll be talking about closed generics, and because of a conflict in scheduling, we will be hosting a call on Thursday at 3 UTC, a little bit outside of our normal 21 UTC Thursday schedule. But we hope that we'll be able to get as much participation as possible. We'll be starting on closed generics this week, and we're anticipating about two meetings per topic. So we've got closed generics for the first 2 weeks here, for the next 2 weeks, and then after that we'll go to applicant terms and conditions, and then after that I think we'll be jumping into registry, registrar, separation, as well as non-discrimination. And then after that, it will probably be just in time for the TLD rollout, as well as the, just trying to go from memory here, the public interest, and as well as, defining the public interest as well as, not defining the public interest, it's the PICs, as well as the contractual compliance. We may not be able to get everything done in time for ICANN 60, but we are sure going to try. So we look forward to speaking with everyone this week, and we're going to try to get done as much as possible on the closed generics, and hopefully we'll have a compromise on this one soon. Thank you very much. Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks, Michael. Caboose, you have your hand raised. Please.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. I think as we're discussing in the jurisdiction group, we came across that the registry and registrar agreement, they do not have any text relating to governing law. I do not understand whether it is something that is wanted, or is it something that it was not considered. Is it necessary to refer to any governing law, or is it not necessary? What is the advantage and disadvantage of that? Because that is some of the point that now we come to some sort of discussing consideration of a possible remedy, if there is a need for a remedy. Since now we're discussing in Working Group 2 or Track 2, this issue, I want to know that whether they have embarked on this matter or they took it as it was and without any change. But that is something that we came across, that it might have some impact on the applicable law. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. This is Jeff Newman. I'm on that work stream to jurisdiction group as well. To be honest, that issue has not come up from anyone in work track two, neither in the charter or in the discussion before this PDP was set up. Certainly, if someone wants to bring it up as an issue, it can be discussed by the work track two. But my guess is that it's probably best if discussed and contained within the accountability work stream too, and then for a decision to be taken in that group, and then to be referred to ICANN staff on how best to implement. But again, to be honest, it has not come up as an issue from anyone in work track two on the agreement.
Can I have a follow-up comment or question? May I have a follow-up question?
Sure.
Yes. I am not suggesting that they bring it in the work track two or work track two and so on. I think that from the viewpoint of the work track two, is it necessary, forget about the jurisdiction group, is it necessary that this RA and RRA have the governing law reference, or it is not necessary? Just I want to discuss that. But that's all. I'm not bringing something from one group to the other group. They are independently discussing, and at the end of the process, that may be something that come back through the appropriate channel to GNSO or whatever group. But I'm saying that does the group work trap to see that is it an oubli, or it is some intentional not addressing, leave it blank, leave it flexible, and so on. That is that. But if it cannot be raised, I don't want to increase that workload. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Caboose. This is Jeff again. What I would propose is that we put that question out on email for WorkTrack 2 to kick around and talk about to see if this is something that they do want to discuss. At this point, I think this meeting agenda is pretty packed, but if it seems like we do get interest from the members of WorkTrack 2 to discuss it further, then we can add that as one of the items. But at this point, I would propose just putting it on the WorkTrack 2 list and to see if it gets any traction.
Thank you.
So any other questions? Comments? Okay, then let's go to, Alan.
Sorry, it just in with relation to that, it dawned on me as you and Caboose were speaking that you're correct. No one has raised this issue. One wonders to what extent, however, the issue might be relevant in attracting new applicants and applicants who are not already part of the ICANN ecosystem. And it may be interesting to add that twist to it when it is discussed. So just a thought. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. So that would be kind of a combination between a WorkTrack 1 to see if there's a way to put it. So if there's any impediments to applying based on jurisdiction.
Yeah. I mean, it's the fact that you have to use California law, or they currently use California law for some things, act as a disincentive to some new players. I don't know the answer, but it may be an interesting thing to consider as we go forward. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. And we will also, if I'll just put a note then in the action items, then to discuss with WorkTrack 1, as this is kind of fits in with the with outreach and attracting applications and the financial support program, things like that. So we'll take that back this week as the co-chairs and the co-leaders and see where, if anywhere, where we can fit that in. So any other comments on this? Okay, WorkTrack 3, we have both Karen, I think Karen's on AC, and Robin, great. Thanks, Robin, please.
Hi, this is Robin. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Okay, terrific. So in WorkTrack 3, in our last call, we finished going through the CC2 responses and some of the issues with respect to the independent process. And now we're going to be shifting gears a little bit and moving in our next call, which is tomorrow, Tuesday, September 12th at 2000 UTC. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about some other topics. We're going to be talking about GAC advice, the handling of GAC advice and the GAC early warning systems. And if we have time, I'm not sure we're going to have time, but if we do have time, we'll also start discussions about the string similarity issue and whether or not we can have some improvements for prediction and whatnot's sake with respect to string similarity. So I hope folks can join tomorrow's call, especially if you've got some experience going through the program and having some GAC early warning issued or some advice issued and have some experience that you can bring to this discussion tomorrow. That'd be terrific. So I hope folks will join for that. Thanks.
Thanks, Robin. And I think that's important that we, as you said, have people that have had experience and to help us with any kind of lessons learned and how things can be done better, if they can be done better, and so on. So if someone could just post that time of the WorkTrack 3 call, even if there's someone who's not normally in WorkTrack 3 that wants to participate. So I'll look for someone from staff to post the time of call. I saw a hand raise, but I guess there's no longer a hand raise. Okay, so let's go on to work track 4. We have Rubens, please, if you're in an area where you can, or Cheryl, actually, both of you are on the call.
Thank you.
Rubens, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, thanks.
I heard an echo, perhaps, well, not hearing the echo anymore. This is Rubensky for the transcript. At work track 4, the most interesting debate we had so far is going right now, which is on registry services. We currently have some two straw proposals that were sent to the list, and this discussion will continue on the list for the time being. So if anyone has any suggestions on registry services evaluation, and even if you don't have the time to join our calls, I suggest you to join our list and discuss that topic so far. Our next call this week, which will be on Thursday, 20 UTC, I believe, is going to discuss financial evaluation. Financial evaluation is a topic that we also foresee to be very controversial. So if you want to join the fun, please come to our call. Thank you.
Thanks, Ruben. As you can see, what Steve Chan has just posted on the list is for Work Track 3, which is the next call on Tuesday. And Rubens was talking about Work Track 4, which is on the 14th, as Cheryl has pointed out in her intervention. So any questions about Work Track 4? Okay, Rubens, I'm assuming, okay, great, that's an old hand. Okay, we're done with the updates of the work tracks. There are a couple updates from the full working group. The first one is, as you all probably have seen by now, our own Avery Doria has been selected or nominated by the nominating committee to the ICANN board starting at the end of the annual meeting, so at the end of the Abu Dhabi meeting, and which is great. Great for ICANN, great for the community. Sad for me in that I'm losing a co-chair. So with that, stay tuned for some announcements of how we're going to plan on, well, we can never fill her shoes, but certainly to see if there was interest in a joining the leadership team here as a vice chair. So we're stay tuned for that and to how we expect. But if you do have any interest, please don't hesitate to reach out to myself or Avery or anyone else in the leadership team to express your interest. Avery, yes.
Thanks. This is Avery. Hopefully I can be heard. I want to thank people for the congratulations and just wanted to assure people that I did intend to remain fully active and until the end of the meeting, and I'm trying to work out all the schedules so that that is indeed the case. And yes, you know, the decisions of how to, you know, go forward with chairing was a decision that was originally made by the working group when you appointed three of us. Now we've dwindled down to one. So Jeff is going to make a proposal of how he would like to go forward with it. And I do believe that you all, as the group that originally appointed me to this co-chair, you know, should sort of jump in and you know, contribute to that decision. And also make sure that if any of you do want to get more involved, either as a co-chair or perhaps a vice chair, which is a little safer, you know, please let Jeff know. Thanks.
Thanks. Thanks, Aubrey. And Ann asks the question, did I say vice chair or co-chair? I actually said both, or either one. We're still trying to decide what would probably be best, whether, given the fact that we're kind of nearing the portion of our working group on the preliminary report, whether it would make sense to train someone up to be a complete co-chair, or whether it would just be easier to get a volunteer that would be able to do a vice chair position. Something I guess we're still thinking about, and if you have any thoughts on it, that's great. I mean, if someone has the time to be a full, complete co-chair, I can, please reach out to me. I'll let you know what the time commitment's like and how much work it is. So it all depends, I guess, Ann, on the type of people that volunteer that want to step up. Caboose says, what about me? I'm not leaving. I'm still here, so you're stuck with me. Right now, Aubrey and I are co-chairs, Steve was also, Steve Coates, for those of you who remember, started out as a co-chair. And as Aubrey said, we are down to one at this point. So, as Ann says, it seems that the person who volunteers has been involved all along. That person could be co-chair. That's right. I guess let's just see what type of volunteers we get and what kind of time commitment they can put in. But we certainly, as Jim says, we need a replacement, either co-chair for workload purposes, as there is a lot of work. But again, if you are interested, let us know. Okay, Ann is typing. So while Ann is typing, I will go to the next item, which is just about, we had the chairs, or I should say Aubrey and I, along with the leaders of each of the work tracks, had a call last week. It was a fairly lengthy call, and so thanks to the leaders for the full 3 hours of that call. And we really discussed kind of our path moving forward and our milestones and timeline. Seems like someone has their speaker not on mute, or their phone not on mute, so if you could just please mute your phone, that would be great. The call this week, we talked about milestones and path forward. What you'll see coming out in the next couple weeks is a plan for reaching those milestones. We still believe we are basically on track to doing a preliminary report, getting that out in Q1 of next year, 2018. So that's why you're seeing a push from some of the work track leaders on getting through all of the topics and making sure that we discuss everything before we sit down with pen and paper and start writing these sections. Obviously, each of the work tracks will review completely their sections, and then after the sections are drafted, we'll go to the full group to make sure that the full group is in line with all of the work tracks before we get that out. You'll also see or notice that what we've been doing, just to kind of give everyone the big picture, is we've been going through CC2 comments along with each of the topics in each of the work tracks to incorporate those thoughts in to see if there are some common themes or recommendations that can come out of those. That this third or fourth walkthrough of each of the issues is really helping us to give us ideas on where we think we can reach consensus within the preliminary report, where we know there will not be consensus and may not be a chance of consensus on those issues, and those other areas where we think we could eventually get to some kind of compromise or consensus, but in the preliminary report, we may solicit or likely to solicit additional feedback to narrow down those recommendations. So that's kind of our thinking in moving forward. You should see, and certainly our goal is to have a much more concrete work plan, not only out for you all by in the next couple weeks, but certainly for the entire ICANN community, which brings me to my third point, which is that we also had a call, Avery and I and the ICANN policy staff had a call with the RPM, the Rights Protection Mechanism, PDP Working Group leadership. So basically Kathy Kleiman, Phil Corwin, and J. Scott Evans, along with their ICANN support policy staff, and to talk about different items, including dependencies. So if you recall, the charter of our group, of the Subsequent Procedures PDP, calls on us, this working group, to incorporate any of the recommendations from the Rights Protection Mechanism Working Group. So we're called on to incorporate those findings and to fit them into our recommendations and to fill in any gaps, if there are any gaps left by the recommendations of the Rights Protection Mechanisms Working Group. For those of you following the RPM Working Group, you will notice that the time frame for the RPM PDP has been extended quite a number of months. In fact, as of the time of their last work plan in June, or this past June or July, it had been extended for about 7 months further than what it was initially when it was set up, when we were supposed to take in their recommendations. And now they are in the process of making a recommendation to the GNSO Council of doing an additional lengthy data collection exercise, which may, or well, I would say would certainly extend their time frame out a number of additional months. So we're looking at if the RPM group is continuing on its current path, they may not have their recommendations until late 2018, early 2019 for us to even consider. And that being the case, you know, that puts their time frame well after the delivery of our preliminary report and even after our schedule for final report. This is all, again, still being discussed, but it may be that we produce a preliminary report, possibly even a final report, without the RPM recommendations, and then either reconvene or, if we're still a group at that point in time, convene again to discuss any gaps from the RPM group. There was a proposal made during the leadership team calls of potentially reducing the scope of phase one of the RPM group, taking something like the URS, the Uniform Rapid Suspension, and moving that into phase two of the RPM group to potentially have some input from the Sunrise, Trademark Clearing Act, and Trademark Claims, sort of within our time frame, but that's still all being discussed. I know the RPM group has been discussing that, and all I can say at this point is pretty much stay tuned. We have to discuss whether, or I guess the council will need to discuss this as well to figure out how to manage the process, and there may be some discussions that take place as to whether the next round of new GTLDs could go forward before the RPM group is finished or with just parts of phase one completed. So that said, there's a lot on the table. I know that's a lot of information. We're still trying to monitor the progress of the RPM group to see whether it will still be possible for us to incorporate some of their findings within our reports. But if we continue down our time scale and the path that we set out for ourselves, it may be that we don't get their recommendations until after we have done some of our work. So if anyone else has any comments on this, please let us know now, raise your hand, or let us know via email. Right now I'm going to turn it over to Aubrey, please.
Thanks. This is Aubrey speaking. Okay, yeah, just a few things I wanted to add to that. One of the principles, there was actually two issues. One of the principles, of course, that we've been operating all along is that, you know, where there's existing policy, if we haven't reached consensus to change it, you know, we can go with it until sometime later that policy is changed and somehow fits into the ongoing process that we're talking about. So that was one of the things that was brought up in that discussion. I'm not sure that was completely favorably listed because of the requirement for the full review of the RPMs before new GTLDs came out. So there's an item of discussion there, probably both for this group and for the GNSO. The other thing we have to consider is which we haven't talked about yet, but I guess we'll talk about briefly going on, is our work track 5 and the geo names at the top level and the amount of time that will take and whether that will be a bounded discussion that will either be completed or status quo on a certain date, or whether that's a topic that will need to be completed before we move on. So actually knowing between the RPMs and Work Track 5, which is the longest pole in the tent, may be another issue that needs to be discussed. So I just wanted to basically indicate that there are those two optional elements and possible complexities. And I don't know, Jeff, whether you wanted to talk about, you know, just a quick update on WT5 or wanted me to give it, however.
Thanks, Aubrey. Yeah, on Work Track 5, we have I think we reported on the last call, the CCNSO has sent in their nomination of Beth Lang, who's on this call. The GNSO, we've gotten a couple of volunteers and are talking to them now to see if which one of them wants to join us. The GAC has reached out to us to let us know that hopefully by the end of this week they will have nominated their person, and I don't know if Alan's got any update on the ALAC, but we have not gotten an update from the ALAC that I can recall seeing, unless I missed it, in a couple weeks. So while Alan, you got your hand raised, and then I'll go to Aubrey.
Thank you. The process is taking longer than we had hoped. We hope should have a selection committee meeting this week and a decision somewhat shortly afterwards. Things could go awry, but I'm hoping still that is what will happen.
Okay, thanks, Aubrey, and thanks, Alan. I'll go to Aubrey now.
Hi, Aubrey again. Just quickly on the GNSO appointment, what the decision that came from the GNSO leadership, and I believe the council, was that as this was a subgroup operating under GNSO rules, that as opposed to them going through a council process or using their standing selection committee process to do this, as we had mentioned, that basically they wanted us to stick with, for the GNSO seat, standard GTLD practice and operations, which is of chairs putting the call out and then chairs picking someone for the role. So that's why we're doing it that way. Thanks.
Thanks, Aubrey. Caboose, and if there's anyone else that's got any questions, you can get into the queue, and I'll read some of the comments. So, Caboose, please.
Yes, as I mentioned in the previous meeting, GAC is almost about to finish the internal process. A GAC leadership has prepared a draft to be sent to you, and in that draft are some conditions accompanied with the participation, and also this condition is under the final review. It has been commented. I made some comment to that, and there was a deadline for the comment, and I hope that after the deadline, that will be finalized and will be sent. So certainly we participate. Nomination has been made, more or less. I leave it to the GAC leadership to announce it formally, but our participation will be accompanied or together with some condition of activities. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. We'll look forward to getting that hopefully this week, and that'll be great. Just to go back to read some of the comments, I guess going backwards, Jim has asked who from the council has stepped forward as Work Track 5 leader. And Jim, no one from the council has actually volunteered. There was one person that reached out to the council that has said that they may be interested. And then since I've had conversations with a couple other people that have reached out to say they might be interested in to just say, to ask about, you know, the time commitment and what it would entail. So I'm hoping that I hear back from them this week and then can just let the group know who has come forward and volunteered so that we can figure out who could serve in that role. So I'm trying to see if I missed any of the comments. Anne has, on the RPM timeline, there was a comment that said if our report affects RPMs in any way, the RPM would have to deal with that before we could go to the next round. And so, yes, there may be issues that they need to deal with that we come up with, or vice versa. Let's see, anything else? Nope. Okay, so Alan, you have a comment, please.
Yeah, thank you. Caboose reminded me the ALAC likely will have some conditions also associated with participation. Not really surprising. There will likely be the ones that are associated with CCWGs. So that is we participate, but we have an opportunity to ratify or disagree with the conclusions when they're finished, and that kind of thing. But nothing particularly surprising.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, thanks, Alan. And just to note for the record that the CCNSO has sent a note to the GNSO Council basically saying similar things, that they reserve the right, that they nominated Annabeth, but they reserve the right to give input later on as the CCNSO. So the GNSO will, I'm assuming the GNSO Council will discuss that during their meeting this week. There's a lot of background noise. If we could get that muted, that would be great. Great. Caboose is next, and then Aubrey. Caboose, please.
Yes, I'm sorry, a small question about work track three. The meeting would be 11th of September or 12th of September? If it is 12, I cannot participate. I will be on the aeroplane. If it is September 11, then I would attend. This is after the midnight of our time here. Just about this. Sorry for this side question. Thank you.
Thanks, Caboose. It looks like Emily's going to type that into the chat. Okay, it's Tuesday the 12th at 2000 UTC. Please. Aubrey, you're really quiet. We can't hear you.
Okay, is that any better? Okay, is that any better?
It still sounds really low.
There is echo. Can I be heard now?
Aubrey, it's really, really low.
Well, then forget what I was going to say.
Okay, Aubrey, I heard that barely, but if you could type it in the chat, maybe that would be best. Although, hopefully we can get your mic up because you're pretty much next on the agenda. Would it be easier to get a dial out?
I've already dialed in.
Ah, never mind. Okay. So while Aubrey is still trying to.
You guys obviously heard that, so I'll just shout, but she's fine.
Well, can everyone else, what's it like for everyone else?
Hi, Jeff, this is Michelle. I'm not able to really hear Aubrey either.
Maybe that'll make me more audible.
Aubrey, can you try again? Okay, Aubrey's going to dial in. So while Aubrey is dialing in, are there any other questions on timeframes or on the conversations we've had with the RPM group? Jonathan, yep, we're having Aubrey call back in, so hopefully she will do that and let us know when she's back on. In the meantime, why don't we get started with the drafting team discussion? So if we could do that and bring up the chart on the TLD categories. And while they're doing that, Anne has raised a question. Did the RPM group raise anything that we know affects our work? And earlier on, the RPM group had referred a couple of the issues to us, including the PIC DRP and the restrictions dispute resolution policy, which are being discussed in Work Track 3. As topics, but since then there's been nothing that we've had specifically referred to us from the RPM group. So let me see, is Aubrey back on yet or is she still dialing back in? Okay, not yet. So then I will start this subject and then have Aubrey take over when she joins. So we're going back to an overall topic that we discussed quite a while ago, and it, you know, it keeps coming back in the sense that there are some dependencies on whether we decide to actually go along with having categories or not. From the CC1 comments, now this is CC1, not CC2, it seemed that most of the groups had favored continuing on with the same categories that were in the initial applicant guidebook. Oh, Avery, are you back with us?
Okay. Yes, I am.
Oh, great. We can hear you. So I'll just finish my part and then hand it over to you.
Okay.
So in CC1, it seemed like we had general agreement. I'm not going to say consensus because we didn't do any kind of formal call, but with the concept of keeping the categories that were specified in the applicant guidebook, which included the geographic TLDs, the intergovernmental organizations, communities, although that's still an issue for work track 3 that they're considering, and then also the added category of brands, which were added at some point, probably about a year or more after the applicant guidebook came out with the specification 13. So it seems like there's general agreement that those categories should be maintained. Then there were some comments that brought up additional categories of TLDs that could possibly be separated out. And where we left off was trying to discuss the common attributes of each of these categories, and if we did decide to go along with categories, what would be the impact on the application process, the evaluation process, contracting, etc. And so with that, I'm going to turn it over to Avery and to continue.
Thanks,
Avery.
Okay, thanks. And just like to make a point, I'd like to leave some time at the end in any other business so that I can get the comment that I was going to make about our working procedures going forward and cross-community working groups at the end so that the group is fully up to speed on that. But for now, what I really wanted to do, and thank you, Jeff, for the introduction. So we've had the introduction that there were the categories specified in the policy, there were the categories specified in the AGB, there was some of those came from the board, some of those came from the policy, and then there was the one that was, and then there's the de facto category that was developed and then sort of memorialized in Spec 13. And so as opposed to asking the general question, since we're entering a stage in these developments where we really have to start finding what we have consensus for and what remains as it was. So at this point, at kind of the first question I'd like to open up is if we accept that was the set of categories, however they developed in the last in the round of 2012, it's a consensus on keeping those. Yes, they need to be changed, they need to be tweaked, they need to whatever. But instead of creating a sort of bottom up theory of categories, we have an existing set. And so they all need refinement. They're all being spoken of in the work tracks at the moment in terms of what to do about community, what to do about brands, how to do them. But there has seemed to me, and I think to Jeff also, a general consensus at the moment that those existing categories should persist even if
they do need to be modified. They perhaps need to be renamed, and something is like, for example, community and its relationship to Spec 12 and community with some of the discussions that are going on there. So that was like the first thing I wanted to open up is, can we assume that we have consensus on that, or do we need to go back and sort of say that, no, what existed in the past is not satisfactory, and we have consensus on changing it? So I'd like to open up the topic on that. Yes, Cavus. I don't hear you, Cavus. Perhaps others do.
You have to change it. Excuse me. Do you hear me?
I do now. I didn't before.
You do not hear me. Is it the same now?
Now I hear you.
Okay. I am asking, are you questioning that, whether the existing, whatever category existing, you call them in the past but existing, is okay, or you have to change it, or you asking once we change whether they something in process need to not be applied? That means you don't want, you want to have a what they say that something which goes the arrangement that the new application would not apply for the old process. You have the new process. What you are asking, you know, the what is the question? The two questions.
Okay.
You made one question in two parts.
Okay, I apologize for being confusing about it. What we have is, we have, whether de facto or in the AGB, a number of categories. We're calling them categories now. Do we have a sort of operational consensus at this point to proceed with talking about those as our basic set before the next question I'll ask has to do with changes or questions having to do with adding new ones? But basically, do we accept a consensus that we have this basic set that we move forward with in terms of, for example, the work tracks? And that's the question. Let me explain it. The work tracks sort of say, well, you know, we don't even know if we're going to have categories. We don't know if we're going to have these basic categories. So how do we talk about changing them if we don't even know that we have them? Now, our basic principle is that unless there's a consensus to change something or to get rid of something, it persists as existing policy. So the question is, do we have agreement to continue forward with these five, I guess it's five, or maybe it's six if you split a geographic and IGO, with this set of existing categories? Yes, Alan.
Until what time?
Sorry, do you want to go to Cavus first?
Yes, let me answer Cavus since it appeared already. Until we either discuss them in the work track teams and come up with changes for them, until there is another consensus call later on the work that's been done in the work track. But for now, we assume that we have categories and that we have an existing set of categories that we're probably continuing forward with in some way or other. Yes, Alan.
Okay, thank you. From my participation in the various discussions, I think we do have consensus that we will not eliminate the categories we already have. I don't think we have consensus that it is the definitive list, and I don't think we have consensus on the implications of having categories, and that is specifically what may vary because of the category. You know, is it specific things you have to, rules you have to satisfy? Might there be a price difference? Might there be other things? So I don't think we have closure on the implications of the categories, but I sense that we have closure, that there will be categories, and we will probably not remove ones that we have already de facto created. Thank you.
Thank you. And that indeed was the question I was asking. The other two questions about additional ones or how the ones that existed are changed, what was not included in my consensus assumption. Yes, Cavus. Do others hear Cavus?
Nope.
Cavus, we do not hear you.
Cavus says in the chat that he's been disconnected.
Okay, so we'll come back to that when he gets back in. So Michelle is trying to help him. Okay, so I'll pause. Is there anyone else that would have sort of and Alan stated it better than I did. So, Anne, while waiting for Cavus, please go ahead with you.
Yes, thanks, Aubrey. It's Annie Kminskalis for the transcript, and I agree with Donna. I do support
you. Can you hear me now?
Hello?
Yes.
Yes, Cavus, I was disconnected. If you allow me, I can give my views.
Wait, we let Anne.
I agree with Alan.
Okay.
Can I talk?
We had let Anne in the queue while we were waiting for you to come back.
Okay, I wait after Anne. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, ready.
Okay, thank you, Avery. Thank you, Cavus. I agree with what Donna said in the chat about the existing categories and also with what Alan said about existing categories. I think there's possibility that you could create a new category. The one that comes to mind to me is applications needing applicant support, because I think that, you know, what we saw was that people needing applicant support, that just didn't, it wasn't very successful, I don't think, in the last round. And I think we need to consider how those might be treated and whether or not another category is needed. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. You're jumping my questions. That was part of future questions I was going to ask as I'm trying to collect information on this call. But thank you. So thanks for that. Cavus, back to you.
Yes, I support Alan that until the time that we decide to suppress or to modify categories, we'll continue to have categories. This is
and,
a safer system that we decide anything else. Thank you.
Right. And the other part of the question, Cavus, just to ask specifically, and thank you for your response, is that the existing set is our base set, that we're continuing at this point with a presumption that we have. We don't know exactly what they'll look like. They may be changed. They may be modified. But that is essentially an existing set that we move forward with.
Yes, my answer also covers that implicitly.
Okay. Okay, thank you. Forgive me for not understanding the implicit meanings. So thank you for reiterating. So I don't see anybody objecting to that being something we can proceed on. I just want to pause for a second and make sure that that's the case. Okay, I even say a check from Cheryl. Thanks. So we'll proceed on that. Now, I'm not going to get into the question at the moment of what changes we want to make to them. Those are being discussed in the various work tracks, and once they've had their discussions, but at least they can proceed on sort of a general plenary notion that the existing ones are under review for how they work, but that there's an assumption on their continuation. Now, basically, wanted to go, there's the spreadsheet that was talked about earlier, and I can put the, and I'm sure staff already gave it, but there's the spreadsheet of different types. And I wanted to look through some of the separate sheets inside it to see where we're at on these things in terms of reaching consensus. So we had basically an attributes matrix. And there they talked about categories of that. And they talked about the open, the geographic, the brand, the intergovernmental organizations, community. And that was our original set of six. And so I'd like to ask over time, I'm not asking for consensus now on these attributes, but I'm really asking people to start looking at them. What I'd like to do at the moment is look at the we have another seven that are listed here, and I just want to see where we are in terms of starting to see whether we have consensus on proceeding with some of these. But I see Cavus has his hand up. Please, Cavus.
No, I'm sorry. That was the old time.
Oh, okay,
I'm sorry.
Great. Okay. So we had one that was, and in fact, I believe that today we just added another one, because with what Anne said, a 14th entry in this, and we'll get to that later, but can be, actually I'll let her state it better when we get there, but I think she stated another class. But we had listed a validated registry. So those registries that had restricted registries with qualification criteria that must be verified. And we did have a certain number of those that were handled in various ways during the round of 212. So I'd like to ask, where are we at on that one? Do people think that that's a category we should be pursuing? I'm not asking for consensus on it without a description of how it works and what it is, but I'm looking for a general view of whether this is a separate category that we should be pursuing and seeing whether we can define it and carve it out. Anybody have a comment on that? Anybody want to speak in its favor? Yes, Cavus.
Yes, I have no comment in either way, but I'm looking at what is the argument that necessitates to add that category. What are the arguments, pros and cons? I don't want to go at table and so on, but first of all, as you said, it is difficult at this call, we decide on that, but I am not sure, because I'm sorry, I have not followed the discussion. What is the argument for adding that category,
okay,
pros and cons? Thank you.
Okay, thank you for the question. That one came out, and perhaps I'll use a financial TLD as an example. And we're asking, does it have registration policies that restrict potential registrants as well as usage, likely minimal needs for registrar services, likely limited registrant base, for example, have to be a registered financial institution in your country. Then there were an example perhaps given, and we're not even sure of that description, but it was those kinds of registries where, you know, because it was something that was regulated in many, if not most, places, that therefore these would have to pay attention in some sense to that. And I'm not arguing for this. I'm trying to repeat the arguments that I've heard. And so please, anybody that supports it, should speak out in their own favor, but it's basically that none of the other categories include that kind of restriction. They're not communities in a normal sense, and because they're regulated industries, but of course regulated industries goes all the way from financial institutions to the people that paint my nails. So, how far does one want to go in that kind of thing? But that was the issue that came up. That was the issue that was discussed. And basically from some of the, I believe, GAC comments and things that came out during the 2012 round, and obviously it was put on this list by some of our previous discussions, there were people that had strong feelings about some, if not all, regulated industries. Alan.
Thank you. I did a pretty exhaustive review of the strings that were identified by the GAC as the highly regulated ones, and looked at the applications and what rules and processes the applicants put on them. And although there were a few that did do verification and validation ahead of time, there were also a significant number of others where the industry perhaps was not as sensitive, that you wouldn't die if someone had the wrong credentials and it lived for a week, for instance, before someone took it down or waited for a complaint. And therefore, I suspect when we come to talk about this in detail, we may want some gradation and not just prior verification and validation, but other perhaps more nuanced ways of trying to make sure that the registrant is one of the approved community or is one of the expected community.
Okay.
I'm not quite sure how to say that in a few words, but I think it's important because prior validation and verification is really expensive. Other methods are not nearly as onerous. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. From what you say, and we're not getting into at the moment the how of doing it, but basically from what you're saying, and please forgive me if I'm jumping to an implication that wasn't there, but an implication that such a category did make sense, how it was defined and what we put in that bucket wasn't known at this point, but that as a category at this point, working on that as one of our possible categories does indeed make sense. And so, Anne, please.
Yes, thank you, Avery. This is Anne for the transcript, and I just had wanted to ask a clarification from Alan. I'm not sure in the realm of highly regulated strings whether he is making a distinction between Category 1 and Category 2 or of the safeguard advice, or is he saying, are you saying, Alan, that even within Category 1 safeguard advice from the GAC that there are strings that would not require a prior verification of eligibility? And let me just explain, of course. I'm asking that question in part, also from a consumer protection standpoint. Okay, sorry, thanks.
Thank you, Anne. It's Alan speaking. The answer is there were 60 or so strings identified as Category 1, and that's all I'm talking about. Of those 60, there were half a dozen, perhaps, that actually had prior validation verification, but there were a significant number of others that, in the view of the ALAC, when we reviewed them, they were sensitive. There were some that we said the GAC was overreaching, and they really were not something that was that met the qualifications, but there were a significant number where we agreed with the GAC, but other mechanisms that are less onerous we deemed to be sufficient. In some cases, for instance, verification within a week after registration was something that was probably good enough. So that, as an example, it's not the only example though. So, but yeah, the answer is yes. I was only talking about Category 1, but nuances within the Category 1 overall list. Thank you.
Just a quick follow-up, Alan, if I may. Did you guys write up anything on that? I'm trying to understand. I mean, if
sure,
a certain
I can,
number.
I can provide a document if you'd like.
Right,
that'd
right.
be great.
Can I? Right. I think it's a great discussion. I think we're moving a little bit beyond where I wanted to take it at the moment, but that's good. Just if those of you looking at the table, if you look at the attributes take two tab, you'll see basically that for all these categories, other questions we'll have to answer later, but I'm not diving into at the moment, is, you know, specific requirements and registration restriction, limited registered pool, limited need for services. So basically all those are broken up, and all of those will be questions that do need to be answered at a particular point. But at this point, what I'm really trying to determine, and this is part to take out the sort of deadlock we've got between what work tracks should be delving into and maybe isn't a priority and stuff, is I'm getting the impression no one has spoken yet against. So I'd really like to ask, is there someone that does not think this category should be on our work list? That basically, we're not approving them at the moment. We're not saying we have a consensus for doing them, and certainly not a consensus for doing them in the following. But we do have a consensus for them being part of the set of categories that we are working on. Yes, Alan.
Thank you. That raises an interesting question. To a large extent, the categories we have right now were, or at least the ones that were used in the first round, were self-selected.
Except for two.
That's correct. It's not clear that self-selection is going to be sufficient here, and it's not clear what other mechanism there will be to identify what a restricted subject registry is, and how the applicant knows ahead of time that that's going to fall upon them. So it's a little bit of a different category, but I think a little of an issue. But I think we're going to have to tackle that at some point. If they're not necessarily self-selected, we may have an a panel that's deciding you are highly regulated, therefore, you know, the business model you suggested probably won't work. And I don't know how we're going to handle that, but I think we have to address it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So still that would be in the further. So I see no one objecting to that being one of the categories that we're continuing to work on. Is that correct? I'll stop for a second. Okay. Seeing no objection there, then the next one we had. Okay, I see. Okay, so then looking at 8, we had the not-for-profit or non-profit UTLDs, the NGOs. Now, that is a category that is different from the community category, though within the community discussion that has sometimes come up as a way to define community. So I'd like to open the topic on whether those are a specific category that we should be exploring at the moment. Do we see it as fitting within the larger community discussion, or what? And remember that this, but when we're talking about a category, we're talking about, without being definite at this point, about different registration policies or different application policies or different, for example, being an NGO is something that is sometimes difficult to verify. In some countries like the U.S., it's relatively easy if you define it as the 501c3, what have you. In other countries, it may be they've been licensed by their government. And in other countries, there's no difference between them and any corporation. So those details would need to be discussed. But is this a category that we should be exploring as we go on as a separate category? And does anybody object to it being on the list as a separate category that needs to be explored specifically? I see no objection to it being on the list and continued as a separate category. Now, the next one, 9, is we already partly talked about it. We already talked about validated and highly regulated restricted. So I tend to believe that those two are the same, but sensitive TLDs for some definition of sensitive would be a specific issue. And I'm wondering where we stand. First of all, do people have any objection to my lumping highly regulated in with validated and that being a whole subject that needs to be explored? Is there any objection to that? Yes, Donna.
Thanks, Avery, and I apologize for the jackhammer in the background. Do we have a definition around those? Because I think they can be quite different. So I don't know why they lump together to start with. So I think definitions are going to be important here before we can make that decision about whether to include them or not. I assume that the board or the NGPC had some definition of highly regulated, and perhaps the GAC did as well. But I think we need a starting point before we lump these two together, because I really don't know whether there is a difference or whether you're lumping them together because you think they're the same. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. I was trying to lump and validated and highly regulated simply because I thought they were similar in some respects. But if they're too different to be put together in a category, we can certainly continue and explore. I also thought highly regulated and sensitive might be different categories. Yes, Alan.
I can see merging the validated and highly regulated. I'm not sure sensitive is the same thing, and I'm not sure I know what you mean by sensitive. Does a religion come under the category of sensitive, for instance? I'm not quite sure what is meant by that word. Thank you.
Okay, and that's what I did indicate. Thank you for your comment. What I was saying, sensitive for some definition of sensitive, and indeed nailing down that sensitive definition would be something GAC and I think perhaps even at large had notions of sensitive, and certainly religion was one of the examples that sometimes fell in that bucket. Yes, Jeff. Don't hear you, Jeff.
Sorry. Yeah, no, sorry. It took me a second to get off mute. I would at this point keep validated as a separate one. The validated TLDs are not always highly regulated. So as I put in the chat, not all VTLDs are highly regulated. So I would keep them as separate at this point.
Okay, thank you. And go on to Jamie, please.
Yes, Jamie Baxter for the transcript. I think when it comes to sensitive, one of the things that should be included is the ability for the applicant to make their case for sensitive. I don't know that it's going to be as simple as letting the board or some other group decide what that are sensitive, given some individual circumstances. And so I think part of the process, should sensitive be a separate category, is that the applicant is required to state their case and have that understood.
Okay, thank you. Cavus?
Yes, Avery. I think highly regulated and sensitive, I have no problem, but combine them with the validated or prohibited validated, I don't think that we could make that combination. But highly regulated, which is obligatory, so sensitive, this is something that in GAC we have several cases and we would like to keep it, but whether we associate that with the validated, I don't know what is validated. I am not quite sure understood that correctly. But highly regulated and sensitive, I fully understand the sense of that, and we have to keep it as a category.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. Could you explain perhaps why keeping highly regulated and sensitive in the same category works?
Yeah, because you cannot separate them. when you say highly regulated, you have to give some reasons of highly regulated. Highly regulated because they are sensitive, that pharmacy, that bank, that medicine, that so on and so forth. So it is a sort of the descriptions. It is sort of the envelope. Sensitivity is part of the reason and argument to be highly regulated or being in the highly regulated. That is the only thing that I could add at this stage.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Jamie, I see your I see your hand still up. Would you, or is that from before? Okay, that Caboose, you just spoke, so I assume that's from before. Jeff, please.
Thanks. Just to answer the question on validated TLDs, and I'm not arguing that they should be a category or not, but to the question of how do you define it, if you go to the site vtld.domain, they have a description. It says a VTLD requires verification of eligibility prior to use, adherence to certain standards, autonomy to take back the name, and ongoing verification requirements. So they have a description there of what, again, this is a self-formed group. It's not something that was imposed on them, but they're self-organized. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. And I guess it's safe to assume that they think they're a separate category. Anne, I saw your hand for a second, but it disappeared. Caboose, is that hand still from before, or do you have a new comment?
I'm sorry, I am not able to raise hand and bring down hand. It is always raised. I'm very sorry.
Okay.
That is why I have to come in. But I have the question. What type of GTLD is a GTLD that is not validated? Why is it this? A GTLD is not validated. What does it mean? I don't understand that.
Okay. For example, I can give you an example from one that I worked with. .NGO, basically, they want to validate that anyone that they sell register a domain name for is a legitimate NGO. So they have certain pre-qualification, or some of them even have post-qualification, but basically pre-qualification to sort of say, prove it. Prove you're an NGO. Show me your 301, your certificate from this government, from that government, or, you know, attestation by other known NGOs that have already been verified that you are indeed a bona fide NGO. So that's one example where they wanted to basically go for validation. Now, in the same sense, and this is where my confusion comes with the highly regulated, is for a highly regulated, the validation mechanisms seem to me one of the ways of dealing with it. But you're right, the issue of why it's done is different than it would be for an NGO. For a validated, nobody regulates NGOs, so it was a self-regulation by the community there, and that's why they went for validation. Okay.
Offer, this is Gigi Levine, and I apologize that for not raising my hand. I'm on audio only. I wasn't
okay.
able to get into the room.
Thank you.
But I just wanted to point out that there are strings within highly regulated industries that are not validated. So I think that would be a reason to keep those separate.
Okay, thanks. And I've accepted the fact that I was conflating things, that there's good reasons not to conflate. So thanks. So, okay, I've heard no arguments for separating highly regulated from sensitive. Yes, Jeff.
Oh, I was just going to respond to, there was a comment on the chat that said that they didn't understand what the difference was between validated TLDs and something like a Nexus. And just to be more clear, validated TLDs validate the who the registrant is and how it's used, a Nexus requirement of where it's being used or where the registrant is. So there's a difference.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Anne.
Yeah, just quickly, Avery, I know we're running out of time, but again, a clarification. I'm trying to remember whether the term sensitive arose in connection with GAC Category 2 advice, or what exactly, you know, sensitive may mean in terms of the 2012 round. What strings were defined as sensitive is something that I think we need to take a second look at.
Okay, yes, indeed. That's why I've always said sensitive, however it is defined, or for some definition. That would be, assuming that we say there's no objection to this remaining a category we work on, defining that becomes one of the issues. Yes, Kavos.
Yes, Avery. My question is that do I understand that for the time being, the highly regulated and sensitive remain a category, and now the subsidiary question is that the validation of the GTLD is a prerequisite for that highly regulated sensitive, or it is totally separate chapter or separate items, validated GTLD? So I guess I want to know the relation of that. Highly regulated, obligatory,
right.
Sensitive,
well,
and
right.
Then validated. Are they the same
okay.
Family or same group, or they are two different?
Okay, I think we've got three. If I'm looking at the comments and I'm looking at the discussion, I think we have the validated, and we were also told that not all regulated are validated, so therefore they are separate in that people can decide to do a validated even without being a regulated industry, and people that have regulated industries can find another way to work that doesn't include validation. So that defines them as separate. Now, we've also had comments in the chat that said highly regulated and sensitive need to be in separate categories because one is a legal standard. Regulated means there's a legal structure and such a regulatory structure, whereas sensitive is more of a cultural item perhaps that may have a reflection in regulation, but does not necessarily have one. For example, when we're talking about, you know, religious names or profanity or what have you, there may or may not be regulations, there may or may not be law governing it, but if it's not regulated, but still people want to say it's sensitive. So those would be two separate categories. And I'd like to hear comments on A, the separation of the comments, and B, on whether both of those should be categories that we move forward with. So I have Anne and Cavus. Are those new hands? All right, Cavus's hand is just permanent. Well, no, it's not in the top position anymore. So, but anyway, okay. And Tim,
Aubrey,
went away.
Jeff. Aubrey, time check. Just it's we need to get to any other business.
Right. Well, probably. How much time do we want to leave for that? 15 or 30, or less?
Well, we're done since this is 90 minutes.
Oh, darn. My last meeting was 2 hours, and I forgot to reset my mental clock. I'm sorry. So we'll stop here. And
yep.
I'm so
and
sorry.
Aubrey,
that was okay. All I was going to say, my last meeting was 2 hours, and my internal clock just hadn't changed. The issue I wanted to bring up under the any other business has to do with the terms of reference for WorkTrack 5. It's very important to the GNSO, and this is something that in discussions with GNSO Council we sort of guaranteed to put forward, is that we needed to remain within the scope and within the practices that were PDP working group practices. Now, those are in some sense different than cross-community working group. Now, my contention is, and I'll put this on the table as a statement, and we can discuss it on List or elsewhere, is that most of the conditions, at least that I've seen so far, actually do fit within the constraints if we look at them appropriately. For example, in terms of anything that's done in the cross-community working group needs the approval of the full group. Now, all of our separate participants participate in the full group, in the plenary group, and therefore are in a position to indicate agreement with the consensus or not. Beyond that, with the way the procedures are written, once there is a initial recommendations, the SOs and ACs are requested to comment on them, and there are all kinds of rules and provisions about what to do when you get a report, a response from an ACSO that's not in accordance with the recommendation. So one of the first things that these group chairs, co-chairs is going to do is sit down and talk about the terms of reference for the group. And my hope on it and my view on it is that we will be able to map the conditions for the most part, two ways, and as we don't use all the guidelines for working groups, we've got a whole bunch of tools that we don't necessarily always use unless we need to, so that we should be able to basically, hopefully, satisfy both of those needs. And I apologize for taking those 3 minutes, but I thought it was very important to say that, you know, we do have a commitment from to the council, GNSO Council, that we will follow PDP procedures and we won't be, for example, voting. But we do have consensus rules, we have comment rules, et cetera. So once we have our five co-leaders, we're going to work with them to come up with rules of procedure, terms of reference. Thanks. I turn it back over to you, Jeff. I don't know what you want to do next, and I apologize for my timing error.
That's okay. Thanks, Aubrey. I would just say that we'll talk more about the Work Track 5 and the terms of reference during a later meeting. Alan, you have your hand raised. Do you want to add before we close the meeting?
Yes, I did ask for an AOB. I'll try to be very brief. I thought this was a really useful meeting, and we've had discussions here that had more depth almost than some of the ones in the subteams, because the attendance in the subteams is not nearly as wide. And I really worry that we're going to come up with recommendations out of the subteams, maybe even ratify them in the plenary, and then go out for public comment and get comments from people who haven't participated in these discussions at all, but dearly care about one of the subjects. And we're going to have to backtrack a fair amount because of that. And I wonder, perhaps the group leaders can discuss, is there some way we can get out messages on a weekly basis or something like that, not only to members of this group, but to the wider ACSOs, saying, work group Suching is going to be discussing the following this week. If you have an interest, even if you haven't participated before, this is an opportunity to influence where it's going. And I really think we need to draw in people at some level to make sure that we really do have plans that we can go forward with and not have to backtrack. Thank you.
Yes, Alan, this is Jeff. We do have a newsletter that goes out every month which says the topics that are being discussed during each meeting. We would ask for your help and others in the leadership of or just participating from certain groups to make sure that word gets out of the content of what's in the newsletters so that we can make sure, exactly as you said, people that may not be in the group but may have an interest in the subject and talk about it. So we send that out usually the first week of every month, and it usually applies for all the meetings that month and maybe even a week or so beyond. So with that, I want to thank everyone for staying late and for a great meeting, as Alan said, and I will talk to you all with the work tracks, and we'll meet again in 2 weeks. Thanks.